Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter Mike Bond. Hope everyone out there is doing amazing. As you can see, I'm not in my typical podcasting location at home in Toronto. I am in Vancouver ahead of UFC Vancouver this Saturday at Rogers Arena, my hometown. It's always nice when we get a home game here in Van City, being a long trip on the road, guys. We did UFC 320 in Las Vegas, stuck around there a few extra days. Hope you enjoyed the podcast on site last week with Laura Sanko and John Wood. That was a lot of fun. And then came up here early, seeing some family, seeing some friends. If you're listening to this on Monday, October 13th, is actually Thanksgiving in Canada. So wanted to knock out a pod here and then going to go have turkey dinner and spend all the time with family and all that stuff. So a great time to be home, but had to get you guys a show this week, and will be a lot of good stuff coming from on site in Vancouver. But the show today will be a good one. We have Dean Thomas, the return of Dean, and we are going to look ahead a little bit here to 2026 and see some of the most obvious fights that we think need to be made. This kind of came to me on the heels of Charles Oliveira's win at UFC Rio, a spectacular finish of Mateusz Gamrot, further solidifying his legacy as one of the greatest to ever do it in the UFC. But then he calls out Max Holloway, and that feels like a fight that has to be done. A few more clear matchmaking options that have dropped into the UFC lap of late than this fight. So give me Holloway versus Oliveira for the BMF belt in 2026. And then Dean and I gonna hit you with a few other obvious matchups that need to happen in our minds. And then on the tail end of the show, my good friend Oscar Willis from the Mac Life will be joining us because it is fight week for him. Yes, he has done BKFC, he has done an MMA fight, and now he is stepping into the highly esteemed world of beer boxing at Fight Circus this weekend. Pretty interesting move by Oscar, and very fascinating to see how this works with the one hand tied to a beer, one hand tied to a boxing glove. And we'll talk to him about all that on the back end of the show. So appreciate everyone tuning in. As always, please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, follow, upvote, all that type of stuff. Support the show. A lot of good stuff coming on the horizon here. Appreciate what we've done in the month of October and much more good stuff to come. So I'm going to take a quick break and then I will be right back with Dean Thomas. We are back here on the Bonfire once again with Dean Thomas, one of our favorite co-hosts of the show, and we're going to look ahead almost to 2026, Dean. It's getting close, but some of the most obvious fights we think the UFC needs to make going into the new year. I think the first one that we mutually agree on, and I think everyone in the MMA community agrees on, is Charles Oliveira after his submission to Mateusz Gamrot. He calls for a BMF title fight against Max Holloway. This one seems like the clearest, most obvious fight to make in 2026 when you look ahead. Do you have any disagreement with this, or do you think Charles Oliveira, on top of nailing the performance, also nailed the call out?
Yeah, for sure. And he did a perfect thing with that call out, because a lot of fighters never really get it right. You know, like, they have a good performance, then they get on the mic and somehow they blow it, or they say something corny and it doesn't go over well. But when you do something like he did after that performance in Brazil with the perfect call out, it really was the perfect, perfect storm for Charles Oliveira. Perfect call out. And then for Max Holloway to just accept it. Like, he heard the call out, then he accepted it. And it's one that we can all get excited about, because no matter how many wins or losses did both of these guys have, they're so beloved by the fans. And it's another situation similar to Dustin and Max, where it's, you just want to see them fight no matter what, no matter who wins, you just want to see the fight. It makes sense.
Yeah. And I think this fight would have made sense even without the Gamrot fight for Oliveira, but him coming off a win now, both of them coming off wins, just enhances it even more, in my opinion. So yeah, he crushed that. And God, I mean, I don't know. Do you remember that first fight between them? I think I was the only person still in media who was covering that in person in Saskatoon, Canada.
Of course I remember. He, yeah. It, like 10 seconds in, he goes, yeah, of course I remember that. But can I speak to that just a little bit more about him not needing to fight against Gamrot? And that's one thing that a lot of fighters have to understand. So fighters get to a certain position and go, oh, I don't want to fight backwards. It does nothing for me. It absolutely does when you nail it the way he nailed it. Like, the fact that he's coming off this win in his hometown, it just makes the fight that much more exciting. And it put us right back. It put him right back in the forefront of our minds in terms of what Max is what Charles is capable of doing. He goes out there, submits a guy who's just a tremendous grappler in his own right, and he reminds us how good he is. And that's what fighters got to understand. When the UFC is asking you to fight backwards, don't treat it as disrespect. Treat it as an opportunity to show us again how good you are.
Yep, I feel like I've said that many times. You know, winning a fight like that, dominant finish, impressive against a guy who maybe 8 or 9 could do more for you than if you win a split decision over number 4 or whatever, you know, because you go out there and you get the highlight, you get the statement. So great win for him. I mean, you can't speak more highly. We all had the fears of him doing this quick turnaround right after the Ilya Topuria knockout, and not a single sign of any of that. Gamrot hit him with a couple good shots there too, and he just took it, kept marching forward. So like, yeah, this was a 10 out of 10 night for Oliveira. You could not be happier if you were him, I don't think.
No, and I mean, what a great performance that was. And it was one that I actually didn't expect. I thought Gamrot would give him a little bit more work on the ground. I've been in a room with Gamrot, and I know what he's capable of. And we've all seen what he's capable of against other people, against other really good grapplers. And for some reason, it just seemed like Charles Oliveira was his kryptonite. He just could not create enough space to do any type of damage or create any type of situations. So it was one that I didn't expect from either man, right? I didn't expect Charles to be able to dominate as easily as he did. And I expected Gamrot to give him a little bit more. In fact, I was a little disappointed in what Gamrot was able to provide in terms of offense towards Charles.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? It's just, that's a gap that he cannot fill up? Or did you see like, oh, if this guy maybe had a full camp for this or like whatever, maybe it would have been different. I mean, he had no fear in going to the ground there, even if it went badly for him in the first round. But like, that's his style. I feel like if you're Gamrot, you have to try to attack fire with fire in that matchup.
For sure. And I don't think it was necessarily a camp issue. I think it was just, he misread how good Charles might have been and just wasn't prepared for that. Now, I do think, not that if he had more of a camp, but I just think that if he had given a little bit more respect to how good Charles is on the ground, he might have been a little bit more prepared and been a little bit better defensively sound and made some different choices in terms of his grappling. But you don't know what you don't know until you learn it. And he learned it the hard way in front of the world. And I think that like in a rematch, if they fought again, you know, he would make some different choices, but he had to find out the hard way. And that's the beauty of fighting, is that you don't know what you don't know until you learn it in front of the world.
Yeah, Charles Oliveira now tied for second most wins in UFC history with Neil Magny, behind only Jim Miller at 24. The most finishes, 21. The most submissions, 17. The most bonuses, 21. The list goes on and on. This is an iconic fighter. And man, I think if him and Max Holloway fight, Holloway's got 23 UFC wins. It might be the most wins ever in a single UFC fight between those two. So that's a pretty legendary matchup that feels like something that could headline a, you know, Paramount numbered card in this new era. Will they go to Hawaii though, Dean? Could they make this happen? I know there was like a report out there a couple weeks ago that talks are heating up. I asked Dana about it after the card in Vegas. He said Mark Zuckerberg should build an arena out there. And yeah, I don't know if UFC Hawaii is happening, but this fight needs to happen.
Yeah, it needs to happen. I'm not sure Hawaii is the place to go. For whatever reason, they've never really wanted to go to Hawaii. Just maybe the infrastructure isn't built for UFC for whatever reason. But if Mark Zuckerberg gets involved, then you never know. I stood next to him outside the Octagon last weekend after Marab's win, and he's so awkward. He's just like, he's got the most awkward energy ever. You know, he's just like looking around. He kind of doesn't know what to do. He doesn't. But as a brother of the game, I respect him because I can tell he wants to be a part of it. All money aside, and that's the beauty about martial arts is all money aside, like you still have to do it with your heart, your soul, and your body. And I can tell he's there, and that's where he wants to be. So as a brother of the martial arts, I co-sign on Mark Zuckerberg, even though he's awkward as hell.
If Charles and Max do fight again, does this feel like obviously the BMF belt will be on the line, but does that seem like a matchup where the winner, we're starting to talk about them maybe fighting for a title again? I know people felt like Charles, it was over for him after the Ilya fight, but he gets those two wins, like top seven wins. That's as good of a resume for a title shot as anyone right now.
Honestly, I don't know, man. I almost feel like these are two separate things.
Yeah.
I think they're two separate things. And the crossover to me doesn't necessarily make sense. I think that, and at some level, and this is, and I hate to say this, but at some level, I almost honor the BMF belt a little higher because of what it takes to get there. It's not politicking at all. It's taking your losses and bouncing back and showing it. And there's something to that as a fighter. Like I just spoke to that in terms of like the brotherhood of the fight community. Like we really respect that. Obviously, you got to respect the champs, but there's some lobbying involved and, you know, there's something about that. There's a little debutantism involved in like being a champ. But a BMF, there's something to that. And I almost wish that they wouldn't cross that over and sort of muddy the waters with either or belt. So I think that they both stand alone in their own right.
Who's your early lean on who you'd like to win that fight if it does happen, Oliveira versus Holloway too?
Honestly, I like Holloway in that fight. I really do. I like Holloway. I think that Holloway just, he's so disciplined in his approach and he's got an underrated takedown defense and, you know, he's not going to shoot on, obviously he's probably not going to shoot on Charles. And I think that just as the fight goes on, Max just finds ways to apply pressure and put his game on opponents.
The first fight was so weird. I was out there, like I said earlier, in Saskatoon. He grabs the neck going down early. And then I remember, like, you obviously have been at the UFC a long time. You know who Dr. Davidson is. He doesn't really do interviews or go on the record or anything. But I saw him in the hotel lobby the day after that fight. And we asked him, like, what happened? And he did go on record. He was like, it was a torn esophagus or an esophagus strain or something like that. And then people were like, that doesn't even seem like a real injury. Like, we can't find too much history on how that works. And then there was, like, no surgery or anything like that. It was a very weird moment. I don't know if it was like a neck strain or misdiagnosed, but you know, like Oliveira says he got hurt early on, Holloway claims it wasn't even a real injury. So there seems to be a little bit of tension between those two over how the first fight ended. It was very, very strange.
Very strange, but who am I and who are we to question the heart of Charles Oliveira?
Now, if well, you said many have over these years, right, they say right, he's a quitter. Maybe they point to that one as one of the fights.
Not in that situation. Sure. I've been there right with him. You know, like when things get a little hot, you know, when he feels a little uncomfortable. I mean, we've seen it before. You know, Paul Felder, situations like that. Obviously, Islam Makhachev. Like when he gets when things get a little hot, he gets a little and you're in his guard, and you know that's a safe space. Mm-hmm. And when you start to penetrate a safe space, he gets a little uncomfortable. We've seen that before, but the Max fight was different. It happened so early. There's no reason for me to believe that he was looking for a way out in that fight. I really believe that something must have happened to him. So I will never question his heart in that situation.
No, I tend to agree. It was just a weird one, but this felt like a rematch that needed to happen for years now. So it seems like it's all coming together. It's just a question of when and where.
The MMA gods always make it work.
Yes.
They make it work. The universe of MMA makes it work for the best.
Okay, Dean, as we go on with that one to me screams the most obvious fight. It gave me the idea for the show just because that was one that I would be shocked if we don't see that in early 2026 at some point. All right, Dean, as we talk about the fights that are obvious to make in 2026, we get a few of the final key fights announced by Dana White on Monday for the remainder of 2025. UFC 323, the final pay-per-view of the ESPN era. Pay-per-view is over after this one, Dean. And I don't know. I obviously thought they're not going to blow the deck out. They're not going to put, you know, the biggest stars, the biggest champions. I think they're just trying to get through this deal at this point. But the one that we, I think, knew, it was kind of, you know, a pretty open secret that Alexandre Pantoja and Joshua Van fighting for the flyweight title on this card in Las Vegas. I mean, this was the clear fight to make in the flyweight division. What do you make of this matchup? Like, the next step in Pantoja's reign, but this one's pretty intriguing. You got the 23-year-old super prospect here who has come charging up the rankings in Joshua Van and looks to be a completely improved version of himself every single fight.
So Pantoja is in a very difficult situation here. And I almost feel bad for him because they almost like use Pantoja to just put Pantoja in it. Just like fill this one. Just Brazil, put Pantoja in it.
Right.
You know, can't my man get some money? But listen, he's a champ. Obviously, not a lot of people know him. So, and it's unfortunate because he's such a dog. He is such a dog. And for that reason, because he's such a dog and he's so hungry and he still has this youthful exuberance about him in terms of the way he prepares for fights. I think that this is, I don't want to say it's going to be an easy fight for him because Pantoja has a way of, you know, kind of making some fights a little tougher than they should be, but I don't see him having a lot of trouble with this unless he gets knocked out. Joshua Van has that vaporizing power like Ilya, unless he gets knocked out, you know, like a big shot, but I don't see it being like back and forth.
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Or with these guys scrambling for positions. I see this being pretty much like stylistically, Pantoja should have his way with Joshua Van. And I love Joshua. Joshua Van's one of my favorite fighters in the UFC currently. I just think stylistically he's a bad matchup for a guy like Pantoja, who's going to take him super seriously, understands what the risk is on the other side, and he knows what he's got to do. I think he gets him down and just overwhelms Joshua Van with just a different level of mixed martial arts than Joshua Van is used to.
Do you think there's a what's the better outcome for the flyweight division right now? Is it Pantoja continuing his dominance and trying to chase down Demetrius Johnson by whatever means possible, or new fresh coat of paint, the 23-year-old, the guy who gets maybe people a little more excited about this division because it's something new?
No, I think Pantoja is still the guy.
Yeah.
For as much as I love Joshua Van, he's still pretty dry himself. You know, and you know he does his talking in the cage. In the octagon, but he can do that whether he's wearing a belt or not. I'm still going to watch him whether he's wearing a belt or not. But I think for Pantoja, he's a great champion. He'll fight anybody, anytime, anywhere. He doesn't complain about things. He won't complain about who his opponents are. He won't pick his opponents. He's a great champion. We need him to have that flyweight belt.
And what will be the final title fight of the ESPN era, the main event of UFC 323? Mirab Davalishvili gets his wish, Dean. He's coming back, fourth title defense in 2025. This is history, man. Like, eight champions have defended the belt three times in a calendar year. He is one of them, but he wants to do something that no fighter has ever done in the history of our sport. Four title defenses in a single year. Unbelievable stuff. He's already beat Piotr Jan. Seems like Piotr says he was 50% in the first fight with a hand injury. I said that to John Wood when I interviewed him in Las Vegas last week. He said we were probably at 50% as well, but not with injury, with skill. Mirab is 50% better now than he was in that fight. And he just gave us bulletin board material, Piotr Jan, by saying he wasn't at 100%. But man, like, I don't know. This is the fight. Mirab is being so good. I don't think many people are going to pick him to lose here, given what he's done, unless you think the schedule catches up. But first, let's speak on just the incredible year he's had and trying to put a bow on this. This is remarkable stuff.
I love it when people prove me wrong. That's why I say the most outlandish stuff is so that they can prove me wrong, because at the beginning of the year, of all the champions, I said Merab was least likely to have the belt at the end of the year. How wrong was I?
Our championship draft is coming up in January. We'll do it again. We're going to look back to see who got the best of this. But
how wrong was I? But I can't see a world in which Merab loses right now. And the fact that like the momentum is on his side, he's got all this stuff going on. So I'm at Aljamain Sterling's wedding. And as soon as the ceremony was over, you know, everybody's leaving. Guess who pulls up? Merab pulls up. Everybody's walking out. The ceremony. He went to the reception, cutting a rug. But just a day after his title fight. I mean, it almost seemed like if anybody else did it, you go, what disrespect? You show up at the, why don't you just wait for the reception? You show up at the end of the ceremony, everybody's walking out. But it's Merab a day after he went five rounds with Corey Sandhagen. He shows up to his best friend's wedding. I mean, it's just, he's just a different level of human being. And I don't know how he gets beat right now. I think Petr Yan is a great fighter. You know, he's got so many tools and he's so good at what he does. But I don't see what he can do differently to stop Merab. Like, everybody's tried that style. Stop the shot. Stop the takedown. And you just get punched in the face. And then when you try to punch back, you get taken down anyway. I don't know what they do differently.
What can he do? I mean, if someone gave you a crystal ball and said Petr Yan won this fight, guess what the most likely way it happened was, what would you say?
Well, Sean O'Malley was like, you got to catch him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard to do. Yes, but that's how you win any fight. You can catch him, but it's not a reliable way of winning fights to just catch him. It's hard to catch. Like if you put me in a Major League Baseball game, I could probably catch a pitch. You know what I'm saying? I might be able to hit a ball if I just close my eyes and swing real hard, but it's not a reliable way of doing it. I think in order to beat Merab, you have to be offensively wrestling him. You need to attack him. And then if you do get taken down, you can't give up your back. I think you got to offense. You got to try to sweep them. You got to create scrambles, but you can't give up your back. And that's what all these guys do. And that's what they're all trained to do. And they're probably getting away with it in practice, but you just can't, it doesn't work against Merab.
Yeah. He's a freak. I mean, the fact that story that came out of him sparring five rounds before the morning of the fight with Corey Sandhagen is ridiculous. Is this common? Have you had a fighter who's done this like on fight day?
The fighters I work with on fight day are like crying, like, oh, I can't wait till this is over.
Not going five rounds.
No, they're not. They're not going five rounds. They can't wait till it's over. Merab is special, man. Like, I'm so happy for Ray Longo, Matt Serra, John Wood. You know, all the guys who've helped Merab out, and just to have a guy like that, you know, in their lives this close in this era is special. And, you know, I'm happy for all those guys.
Yeah. And I know when we did our little fighter of the year sliding tables a few months ago, like we said, if Jack Della Maddalena can beat Islam Makhachev, it's going to be hard to top his year beating Bilal and Islam. I think four title defenses if Merab does this. I'm sorry. Like, this has never been done in the history of our sport. Let's not rob this man just because some other stuff. It's got to be this.
I mean, and we're talking about a guy who started his career off at 0-2.
I know.
And a guy who got in the UFC because they were looking at Rafion Stotts on Dana White looking for a fight. Yeah. Like he wasn't the prodigy. He wasn't the golden child that they were bringing in to build up. He got in the hard way and fought everybody and beat everybody.
Yeah. And now he's making this bantamweight division, which I would say was one of the toughest and most difficult to dominate for years. He's making it look weak all of a sudden, which is freaking crazy. I never thought we'd see the day. It's remarkable. So yeah, that's UFC 323. Dana White dropping some news on Monday, and we have our schedule complete now, Dean. Essentially, I think all our main events for the rest of 2025. So now we can truly look forward to our 2026 and our obvious fights to make. So that puts a bow on that, and we'll keep it rolling here. Asked you to come up with some other fights that you felt were just like clear layup matchmaking for the UFC as we look ahead to next year. I'll give you the floor. What was the one that stood out to you most after Oliveira versus Holloway?
All right. And it's not all that obvious. So, because I kind of went deep because I wanted to go a little deeper because some of these aren't as obvious.
Okay.
I'm going to start with a little deeper, and I'm going to start from weight classes. I think we bring Mokaev back to fight Pantoja.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
I think that the flyweights are running out of like compelling guys. I think the Mokaev story is interesting enough. I think that he's still a compelling figure. Pantoja needs challengers. I think we bring him back. And Pantoja is a dog, and he'll fight numerous times. It's not like it's taking up the space of somebody else, but I think we bring Mokaev back in 2026 to fight Pantoja.
And this is, so are we giving a little insight into your thoughts on Pantoja versus Joshua Van? Do you feel like Pantoja keeps the belt, or is Pantoja?
Yeah. I think stylistically, it's a pretty good matchup for Pantoja against Joshua Van.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, beyond this fight, if he defends that belt, there's nothing that screams out there. I mean, they just announced Manel Kapp and Brandon Royval will be the final main event of the year on December 13th. Manel Kapp has kind of been there, but he just can't be healthy or consistent enough. I think they would like to give him a title shot if possible, but he needs to prove himself a bit. And then Kyoji Horiguchi fighting in Qatar, maybe he could do something there, but they have the whole teammate element with Pantoja. So yeah, that would be great. Muhammad Mukhaev needs to be in the UFC, in my opinion. Do you think they can smooth that over? Like that seems to be the bigger hurdle, is just getting on the same page with the UFC brass.
Well, that's the biggest problem. And from, you know, rumors have it that he wasn't very nice to some of the staff at the UFC. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest problem. So when you cross that line, it's very difficult to make amends. And if that's the case, I'm not sure that it will happen. I'm hoping that they can make amends because, you know, I like to see the best guys in their prime fight in the best organization in the world. And I feel like Mokaev is one of the best guys in the world, and he needs the platform. He would benefit from the platform.
Okay, I like that one. I will take my turn now. This one stemmed from an interview I did last week in Las Vegas with the former UFC middleweight champion Sean Strickland, who called out Fluffy Hernandez and said that's the fight that he wants to do. He called him the American Chimaev, said that, you know, if I can show I can beat Fluffy, who's going to try to do a lot of the same things that Chimaev will try to do, that shows I'm the worst possible matchup for Khamzat. Like I've been saying, give me my title shot and I'm going to beat Khamzat too. So obviously this ducktails kind of well into the UFC Vancouver main event this weekend where I am. Fluffy was supposed to headline that fight against Renier de Ridder. Didn't happen. We got de Ridder versus Allen now. Given where the middleweight division stands and who's fighting and who's not, this one feels like a pretty clear fight to make. And for Fluffy, gets him over the hump, former champion on the resume, and for Strickland, gets him right back in the mix by beating the guy with the longest winning streak in the division currently.
See, I thought that you were going to go with Strickland versus Israel Adesanya. So that's the one I would go with.
Yeah, I mean, that one feels like a fine fight to do. And I asked Sean about that, and he says, like, sure, but I don't think that does anything for me. Like, Izzy's lost multiple fights in a row. Yeah, he's got the name, but I already beat him. Like, I want the title shot. I want to fight for the belt. I want to beat the most relevant and dangerous and highly ranked guys now. And Fluffy is that. So, like, I respect that from Sean, the mindset, not being like, hey, let's just get a win over a guy who I already beat, who hasn't won a fight since, or one fight since. Has he won a fight since? I don't think so.
No, he lost to DDP.
So, like, I respect that mindset, at least. He's going for the tough fights.
Yeah, no, that's respectable, 100%. It's just a matter of whether he means it or not. You know, it's just like if you don't mean it, man, please don't take up the spot. You know, Fluffy could, you know what I mean? Don't take up the spot. You know, just fight Izzy. You know, that's a compelling enough fight, but don't take up the spot. But so if he means it, it would make sense for both guys, 100%. But I just feel as though I'm just not 100% like how much he means it in terms of like wanting to win a belt and what he's willing to do to go through it.
He seems to really hate Khamzat Chimaev. Like, that seems to be a deep...
If that's motivation enough, I'll buy it then. I'll buy it. Like, if this is preparation for him to get Khamzat Chimaev, I'm all for it.
Yeah. He claims he's one of the best grapplers in the UFC. He just never gets to show it. So, I don't know. We'll see what Sean Strickland can do with this time off. He's now married as well. So, maybe he's a different guy.
Mike, that makes me so mad, man. Like, about how I hear how good of a grappler he is. He's always at like the UFC BJJs, but yet in fights, he's so anti-jiu-jitsu. I'm like,
you know,
it's so annoying to me. I'm like, why are you so anti-jiu-jitsu, but you're so good at it? And why are you at UFC BJJ? Just leave it alone.
I know. Okay, I'm going to go back to back here because I still have another middleweight one. And I feel like you might disagree with this, but Khamzat Chimaev versus Nassourdine Imavov for the middleweight title feels like the one to go, or am I, is this not obvious because Rainier DeRitter could do something this weekend at UFC Vancouver, or do you think no matter what Rainier does, the Brendan Allen win doesn't top what Imavov has been doing?
I think that what Imavov has been doing is enough. I mean, yeah, he probably deserved, like, the only reason why he didn't get it before is just because he's so dry.
Yeah.
Right. And he probably deserved it even before the Caio Bahio win. So I do think that that's the fight to make at middleweight. So hopefully they can get that somewhere along the line, put this out. But that is the fight to make. So I'm not opposed to that. I'm 100% with you on that.
Yeah, I think that's the middleweight, the obvious middleweight title fight, unless DeRitter does something crazy out there this weekend. But I don't know, just while we're on it, what do you think of this fight between Rainier and Brendan Allen? I think Brendan Allen stepping in on short notice, seems like they trained together in the past. So I don't know if Brendan knows something and they gave him the confidence to come into this on short notice. But what do you make of this matchup?
Honestly, I don't know how much they trained together. It would be weird if they didn't. But from the rumors that I'm hearing in the gyms, is it – they haven't really trained together all that much, if at all. Okay. So, yeah. So I don't think that is much of an issue. I think the issue really was just, you know, that's Brendan Allen's, like, it's been his home gym for a while. And, mm-hmm. you know, Rainier just comes in and is like, yo, it's my spot now. And then Brendan Allen, you know, wanted to do his camp somewhere else. So I think that's kind of where the beef comes in. But I don't know how much of a factor it plays. It'll be interesting to see. I'm leaning towards Rainier DeRitter just because Brendan Allen's strengths are really being able to take people down and just overwhelm them on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like he needs that element in the fight game in order to get his wins. And I don't think he's going to be able to do that to Rainier. He's got to come up with something different.
Yeah, I've been high on Brendan Allen for a long time since he came into the UFC. I'm like, give me all the Brendan Allen stock. And there's been some ups and downs, but I feel like he's got to get this one if he wants to, like, maximize that potential. He's had some shots against, you know, the higher tier guys. Hasn't always gone his way. I feel like if he wants to be that guy he says he is, he needs this win and this upset.
And I think he had the potential. Just the timing of his, you know, training and career, like, it just didn't work out. And that's what it is with most guys, just timing of it doesn't work out. But I think he has the mindset and he had the potential. It just didn't work out as it doesn't for most fighters.
All right, flip it back to you, Dean. Who's your next obvious fight to make?
All right, so I'm going up the weight classes. You went to middleweight. I'm going to 135. I'm going
big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Corey Sanhagen and Sean O'Malley. That's the fight that I think I've always wanted to see, regardless of where they were in their careers, just stylistically, two long, lanky strikers with very competent grappling skills. I think that's the fight to make. I would love to see that. Hopefully the UFC can find a spot for them somewhere in 2026.
Yeah, that makes too much sense. I love that suggestion. I think they would both, they've been talking about it for a while, and complementary striking styles. I think that would be a lot of fun on the feet. I'm sure neither of them have had fun these past couple camps training for Merab and then, you know, Corey for Umar, all that stuff. Give these guys something a little more complementary to their styles, and that would be an absolute banger on the feet.
And plus, I think they're in a good position in their careers where they're more willing to take chances now because there's not a fear of losing because you're going to lose a title shot. Mm-hmm. They've both been there and fought for it. And I mean, Corey's fought for what, three times now? So it's two, three times now, and Sean has been the champ. So I think they're in a position now where it's just like, you know what, man, let's just get this money. Let's just go out there, put on a good fight and get this money. So I think now's an even better time for them to fight because there's not that lingering title hanging over them in order to hold back. So this is a good time for them to fight, for us anyway.
That's a great one. I dig it. Go back to back. Give us another.
All right. So I thought Aaron Pico underperformed in his first fight. I would love to see him get that Movsar Evloev fight back. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a better matchup for him to give him an opportunity to show what he's capable of. So in 2026, let's get the Aaron Pico Movsar Evloev fight.
I like that one a lot, especially if you're Pico. I think not going up against someone who's a big knockout threat is probably your best call going forward here. Let's get show off some more of the grappling chops in UFC fight number two.
Yeah.
I wonder. It's been all quiet on the Movsar side of things. I think we're pretty certain he's not getting the title fight. He's got to win at least one more. But yeah, haven't really heard. Don't know what his timeline is. And yeah, he's really fallen out of the momentum at the top of the division. Pretty unfortunate for him.
And that's key. Momentum is key. It's your momentum in terms of what you're doing inside the octagon and also who's talking about you. So the longer you sit out, it just like if you sit out, like so many other circumstances outside of your control have to happen for you to get a shot. It's just like you have to if you're sitting out, it just has to be no one else and then they'll give you a shot. So it's not a good thing to sit out. Like if you want to command and demand your opportunities, you got to be active and you got to stand out.
Yeah, and you got to finish a fight here and there too. I think Movsar are 9 wins, 9 decision wins. So you got to get over the hump a little bit there on that front. But yeah, I think Pico would be a good matchup for him too. Okay, I like that fight. I'm going to go with one that's probably very high profile. Seems obvious whether we're going to get it. Who the hell knows? But let's throw a Conor McGregor fight in there. Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler feels like the obvious fight to make if he does come back, assuming all this stuff. I mean, the suspension news came out last week, which for the whereabouts location things with the anti-doping association they work with. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Connor's coming back, if we're getting this. They're saying all the right things. But if he does, if we get through all the red tape, it's got to be Michael Chandler, right? Or is there a more obvious Conor McGregor fight?
No, that one's on my list as well. Yeah, it's if it's going to happen, let's just do it now, right? Let's do this. Let's do it at the White House. Michael Chandler has earned this after putting himself out there almost to the point of humiliation for 3 years waiting for this guy. And then he took a fight and lost. I mean, just give him the fight, you know, and it's obviously probably the best fight for Conor as well, stylistically, that gives Conor a decent enough chance to win because there are some murderers right now at 155 that it probably wouldn't be all that competitive. And just watching Conor's training, I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with what he's doing in training right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's early, but I'm still not impressed. But I think Michael Chandler has earned his right to fight Conor McGregor. He still has a shot to win, but let's make this fight happen.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It's just I wonder if we're going to get there. It's still 8 months.
It's a long time away, man. Sometimes you just wish they could just do the fight tomorrow. This is just do the fight tomorrow. It's a long time away.
What did you make of that suspension situation with Conor? Like, is it just something we kind of brushed to the side, given it's just whereabouts things? I mean, we all kind of know the deal, right? Like, he was pretty straightforward that he was taking stuff, like, after the leg break and when he was filming Roadhouse and all that. He was out of the pool. I think that, like, predates some of this stuff that went on. Well, I don't know.
I get mad at the media at this stuff because, like, when I first read the headline, it was like Conor suspended, and I'm like, oh no!
What
like,
did he pop for?
Yeah, what did he do? And then it's like, oh, it was his whereabouts. And I get that too. Like, you need to tell them where you are at all times. But then it was like retroactive, and it still doesn't take him away from fighting in the White House because I thought initially, like, it was like 18 months from now. So that I was like, yo, just hang this guy up, just put him away. But now I'm thinking, okay, so this actually makes sense. Honestly, it just. By the time his suspension is up, he'll be ready to fight in the White House. I think it makes a lot of sense. So I'm not really putting too much stock into the whole suspension and the anti-doping thing. I mean, we all knew he was doing illegal substances. So that wasn't a question at all.
Yeah, it's just the timing of it is weird. Like when you look at some of the whereabouts things where they couldn't get him, like one was right after the press conference got canceled when they were supposed to do that in Ireland, like right before the broken toe stuff came out and he pulled out of the Chandler fight. So who knows? There's some weird stuff there, but there's a whole other conversation to be had about the overreach of the whole whereabouts element of this program too, and having to let these testers know where you are 24/7 when you're an independent contractor.
Yeah, it's kind of weird actually when you have to. I mean, like every time you go somewhere, like I could never do it. Like I'm so sporadic. You know, I might hop on a plane tomorrow. I'm end up at Anthony Smith's house in Omaha, Nebraska. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I can't be telling them everywhere I'm going. So it is a bit unfair to have to be that, like, to be on top of it that much. It is a bit unfair for these guys.
Yeah, well, especially someone like Conor who, like, very
flexible
lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. That guy. I mean, you could never. Would you even think to track him down? It's not going to happen.
No, unless you can get out to his super yacht.
Yeah, he's flying on the yacht. Like, yo, I'm on the yacht. Come get me.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go back to you. What's your next one?
All right, so I'm going to go to the women's side. And again, this is me just wishful thinking, but it could be a possibility. Sometime in 2026, I want to see Kayla Harrison and Ronda Rousey.
Wow.
You know, I want to see Kayla Harrison and Ronda Rousey. Two.
Just feeding Ronda straight to the wolves when she comes back. If she comes back.
Hey, listen, this ain't boxing, man. You know what I'm saying? This is the biggest platform in the world. This ain't boxing. We're not trying to build you. You got to fight. You know what I'm saying? You got to fight. That's the difference between this and boxing is you got to fight. You know what I'm saying? Ronda was a former champ. You got to fight. So
yeah, I think 10 years off. I mean, if we were thinking of obvious Ronda Rousey fights, assuming she did come back, I got to lean with the Misha Tate trilogy. You know, I feel like that's the one where you give Ronda and say, hey, if you can't win this.
That's the one. I mean, obviously that's the one that's going to happen. I'm just wishfully thinking, but that makes more sense. And that's the one that's going to, if Ronda comes back, she's probably going to fight Misha Tate.
And if she wins that, then you put her into a title fight.
And I still get my wish. Yeah, I still get my wish. Yeah, I still get my wish. So give her, let me backtrack. Let's give her Misha Tate first. If she wins that, then throw her on to Kayla Harrison, regardless of Kayla Harrison's situation.
Yeah, do you think she comes back? I talked about this last week with Laura Sanko a little bit. Like, she seems like she's training hard, like surrounding herself with good people, but she went on that like book tour and all this stuff, like promoting how she had had like serious brain issues stemming even from like her judo days. And then she came into MMA. And then, like, you know, by the time she got to the Nunes fight, like a gust of wind would rock her. And like, you know, she would get hit with one punch and it'd be all stars and things. And then like some more issues when she was in WWE where she just seemingly like couldn't take that amount of force. Like, that doesn't come back in the tube, right? Like, so that kind of, that worries me for her. Could she even get cleared after saying all that stuff?
Well, then she shouldn't even be cleared. Right? Yeah. Like, you don't, because how irresponsible would it be for a fight organization to hear all that then put her in a fight? That would be, it almost sounds as if you might have leaked that stuff in hopes that they don't put you back in a fight.
Yeah, and like, good for her if she's training and getting her fitness and all that stuff. Like, you know, that's what you should be doing, maintain that athletic lifestyle and all those things. I'm sure it's her, you know, having three kids hasn't been easy on the body, but yeah, I just wonder, 10 years out, she says all that. I don't know if you can spin it and say it's not actually true. I was doing that for the purposes of the book to, you know, sensationalize things and make sales. I don't know the answers to these questions. All I know is she said that she like could barely get hit without feeling concussion symptoms. So I don't know.
Oh, then, yeah, that's a wrap then. Like, you can't fight then.
Yeah.
You can't fight. Like, if you can't do that, you can't fight.
Yeah.
He's going to admit to it.
And she was going all across the country doing all these big media outlets talking about this. So I don't know. It's very strange to me that we're not saying this is the first counterpoint when we see her train or talk about a comeback.
Nah, I had to take that one back then.
It's not on you. I had a Ronda thing on here. Like, we're all talking about it. I get it, but I just wonder on the other side of it, the medical side. So,
yeah, you can't play with those issues. It wouldn't be good for the sport anyway. It would be a real bad look on the sport to have someone complaining about those type of issues, and then you knowing that still put them in a fight. Mm-hmm. That would be a bad look. So, if that's the case, we got to keep her out the octagon.
Yeah, and that's like, that's stuff that doesn't go away, right? Like, if she didn't spar once in the past 10 years or whatever, took very good care of herself, like, that's not stuff you can undo. It's still there lingering, right?
You know, the only person I've ever seen almost kind of heal their quote-unquote chin, Frank Mir did it. Like, Frank Mir, for a while, he was like, you pluck him and he'd fall down. And he said he took a lot of time off and did whatever it is that he did, and he seemed to have healed his chin. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that's just maybe his ability to not get knocked out, but I'm sure the brain damage is still there. So I don't think that can be healed. So, and I'm not a doctor, but it seems like, I don't know how you heal that portion of it.
Yeah, that's my thought too. Maybe we'll get someone smarter than us when it comes to that on at some point to discuss this stuff. But for now, Dean, we'll go to the next, or my turn or your turn?
Your turn.
Okay. I'm going to go with, to me, what feels like the obvious first headliner for the new era in January under Paramount. It's got to be Ilya Topuria. And I think the fight you have to make is Paddy Pimblett. I know it's people will say Justin Gaethje, and there is his supporters out there, but he got one chance to kick off this Paramount era. You want to do the biggest fight. You want to do one that both guys will sell it, a grudge match, beef, lots of history with them talking about each other. This feels like the way to go. I don't think you could do a stronger start to the Paramount era. So that's the fight for me. I know Justin Gaethje will be very upset, but after we got Armin Sarukian and Dan Hooker booked, this feels like it's either one or the two. It's either Pimblett or Gaethje, and if I got my choice, I think Pimblett's the bigger fight right now.
Wow, that is a very compelling argument, because I actually had Justin on my cards, but that's just the MMA guy in me hoping that Justin finally gets his due, you know, his respect. But, you know, this game isn't based on respect for guys like me. It's based on entertainment and what's the bigger fight. So Paddy would definitely be the bigger fight, not only just because of his influence in Europe and what he's done, even when he comes here, but the beef behind that. I mean, there's a lot of beef behind that. I mean, and you can pull old video clips, and I mean, this would be one of them situations, because I think the UFC may have been criticized recently for its lack of the way they're promoting individual fights at times, you know, like, so it's kind of like, it's just like 1 week and then the next week and then the next week. And remember back in the day, they used to put a lot more into it. Like with that Conor and Aldo, I mean, they had a whole commercial on these guys, but I think this is a fight where I think the UFC could really, really go back and pull up a lot of old clips of them talking and just a lot of beef. And I think they would do a good job of promoting this, which would probably be the biggest fight, maybe one of the biggest fights that you could make in the UFC altogether.
I think so too. If you look at the whole roster, and again, it feels fleeting too. Like Paddy Pimblett proved himself against Michael Chandler to a degree, but we still haven't seen him against a top five lightweight. Maybe if you put him in there with one of those guys who's at the very top of the division, he gets smoked, and then you're like, he's not as good as, I mean, or people like said he was never this good all along, and then he never gets that title shot. Like, I know people, they want the merit, they want the guys who deserve it most, all that stuff, but there's also the entertainment and the sports side of it. And yeah, maybe Paddy Pimblett, you put him in a fight that's not this against a top guy, he loses, and then you're like, well, we're never going to get this fight now.
Yeah, you're right, because we don't want to waste that shot. This is the same thing I was talking about with like Sean Strickland. Let's not waste that shot. Like, we have it now, where, you know, Paddy hasn't really been figured out yet. You know, we've said there's that contingency to say, oh man, maybe he's not that good, but he's proven those guys wrong and wrong time and time again, even myself at times. And he seems to be getting better. And a fight with Ilya Topuria, I look at this and I go, man, I don't know for Paddy, but you never know, man. He deserves the opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I look at it as if like he might get killed, but at least he deserves the opportunity.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people out there who would love to see him get killed after, you know, his talk for all these years. So like
everybody in Georgia and Spain.
Yes, there you go. Speaking of Ilya, I mean, dude, this has come up like since Saturday, since Oliveira's wins. I know people talked about like the greatest three-fight winning streak, Volkanovski, Holloway, Oliveira. Some people said, oh, those guys are washed. Like, you know, he's caught them at the tail end of their career. Look how they've all rebounded since losing. Volkanovski wins the title at featherweight. Max Holloway defends the BMF belt against Dustin Poirier, and then Oliveira rebounds with this win over Gamrot. Like those wins.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
All for Topuria have aged even better. You can't say that he beat the washed old guys at the end of their career, seeing how they bounce back. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, for sure. 100%. I mean, he's catching these guys in moments where they're just susceptible. And it's not like they're washed. They're not washed. Mm-hmm. He's just catching them in moments. And that's the thing with power. Like when you have power, man, you can really just change the game. You can change the game. And he's figured it out. He's figured out what he does best, and he's got power. And all it takes is one punch from him. Yeah, Ilya's in a real good spot right now in life.
Yeah, well, we hope so. I'm not going to comment on his personal life, but I think that's been a narrative out there too. Whether
even with that, that's motivating. He seems to be motivated.
Yeah,
most guys I know get motivated by situations in life.
Yeah, his Instagram caption seems like he's got some emotion to unleash when he gets in the octagon next time. So I wouldn't want to be whoever his next opponent is. But yeah, like, can we agree that's maybe outside of Holloway and Oliveira, like this is, whether it's Topuria versus whoever, this is one of the most obvious fights to make? Like, would you be shocked if he's not headlining the first Paramount card?
I would be shocked if he's not. And I think that, you know, at this point, like these fighters they're getting to the point where they need something bigger to motivate them. And when you're the champ and you've knocked out two of the greatest featherweights of all time, and then you just knocked out the most beloved lightweight in the world, you know, you need something to motivate you, like something also exterior outside to motivate you. And fighting on Paramount for the first card would be motivating for him. Like, oh, I want to do that. Almost the same reason why everybody wants to fight at the White House. It's like, oh, I want to do that. It's motivating. So I think that this would motivate Ilya even more, and it would be a great fight. It would be one that gets us all excited for the Paramount era.
Speaking of the Paramount era, I'll go. I think I have two left here. You mentioned a women's MMA title fight. I'll go with the one that we would seemingly get before a Ronda Rousey versus Kayla Harrison fight, and that's Amanda Nunes versus Kayla Harrison. I think that is one of the most obvious fights that is on the horizon for us. They already faced off in the cage. It's just about clearing up all the clerical tape with getting through the testing window and all those things. But this one feels like the pretty obvious one. I know you're working with Amanda, so how's that going? Is she in the lab? This is what everyone is anticipating, right?
Yeah, she's in the lab where we're putting in a lot of tedious work daily. I'm going to be seeing her tomorrow, actually, and then Wednesday. But yeah, we're putting in a lot of work, and she's such a pleasure to work with. She's so excited to be back fighting and in the UFC, and she really wants this fight, and she really wants to get her belt back. And it's a pleasure to work with somebody who's actually taken time away from the game to step away from the game to see the bigger picture. Because a lot of times when you're a fighter and you're in the forest, you just see the trees and you don't see the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So when she stepped away, she saw the bigger picture. And now she has a different perspective towards the game, a different perspective towards training. And she's a lot of fun to work with. Like every day we go into the room, it's good vibes, and we putting in good work, and we're studying, and we're just, you know, very detailed about the work that we're doing. And I'm excited about this fight.
Does she seem like, I know you're not the manager and all that stuff that gets done on the other side, but does she seem like she's in a position where if they had her fight in January and tried to do this, maybe say on the first Paramount card too, like is she in that position where she could fight in 3 months?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like we wanted to see, when I first started working with her, we was talking about fighting before the year's over.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We thought we was going to get this before 2026, but I don't know how realistic that is. Time is running out, but she wants to fight. Like she wants to fight, and every day, you know, she gets a little bit better every day, and a little bit smoother every day, a little cleaner every day, and like she just exponentially, you see her progress. It's amazing to see.
You got any more on your list here? Or did you?
I do. I got two more as well.
All right, let's hear.
I'm going back up to the middleweights. I'm going Joe versus Bo.
Oh, Joe Pyfer versus
Joe Pyfer versus Bo Nickel. Yeah. Both of them have ties to Pennsylvania. Obviously, Joe Pyfer is a relatively a Philly guy in his own way. And then Bo Nickel wrestled at Penn State. And I know that they had a little bit of beef prior, or little words. And just talking to Joe, Joe's my man. He really wants to fight Bo. So I had to put this on my list.
Yeah, well, we'll see that. I mean, I think if Bo gets through Rodolfo Vieira in New York, that makes a lot of sense for 2026. If Joe is willing to do it, when you said that, the only thing that came to my mind was like, would Joe be willing to fight down? Like he just got his win in the rankings. But if he wants it and he's told you that, I don't think there'd be any issues then.
Oh, no, he has no issue in fighting down in the rankings, especially against a guy who he really wants to fight. Like there's I'm not going to speak for Joe and say that there's a dislike, but it's definitely he wants to fight him. So regardless of where Bo Nickel is ranked, he wants to fight him. So I don't know if Bo wants that fight, but you know, it's a fight that I would like to see in 2026.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, give us your last one too.
You're on. My last one, it's kind of open-ended, but we got to get this guy in the UFC somewhere. Gable Stevenson. Let's just get him in. Let's just get him in. Get him in somewhere. I don't really know who you put him against. Who do you really put him against? Because there's no other real, like, compelling heavyweights. You go, ooh, I want to see that fight. So you just put him against anybody. So I'm going Gable Stevenson versus anybody. Just let's get him in the UFC in 2026.
That's a good one. We actually, one of my colleagues at MMA Junkie, Danny Segura, I talked to him, I think, a few days ago, and he said he'd love to make, he could see in his mind's eye making his UFC debut at the White House. Obviously, no opponents, things like that. He's only got the one MMA fight. I think he's doing dirty boxing again very soon here, and we'll see what kind of record he can add up between now and next year. I don't know. Do you feel like, do they go the contender series route with him next season? Like, do you get him to do?
I don't think you do. I think I like what he sees in his mind. I think you make, you know, he's an Olympian.
Yeah, Olympic champion. Put him on the White House card. That makes sense.
Put him on the White House card right away. Like, first fight in the UFC on the White House card. Do it. You know what I'm saying? Again, let's not waste it. If he's as good as advertised, which I believe he possibly could be, he's got the right people around him. He's a tremendous athlete. He knows how to compete. Let's put him in there. Let's just throw him in. And come on, man. Like, you know, the heavyweight division ain't that deep.
No, it is not.
You know what I'm saying?
That's the good and the bad part about it. That's can be scary.
Let's put him, and I'm not saying put him up against a bum, but there's a lot of guys that you can put him up against that you might be able to make a compelling fight or could give him a little bit of a run. But, you know, let's get Gable Stevenson, dirty boxing, and maybe another fight or two, you know, LFA, and then let's make his debut, UFC debut in the White House.
I love that. Okay, I think that's a great way to put a bow on it too. So I think we scratched a lot of itches here with the various fights and the various weight classes. So great job, Dean. I think we match made well. We'll see if Hunter and Mick and Sean Shelby watch this and take some of our ideas, because these are always the obvious fights here.
They always do, man, and we'll never get no credit for that. You know what I'm saying? Mick and Sean just be hanging out, like taking all the credit. We never get no credit for that. We did all the work.
I mean, they shouldn't have to steal these ones. As we said, these are the most obvious fights to make. So let's see how many of them come to life here. So appreciate it as always, Dean. And hope everything is going well on your end. And I will take a quick break and then be back with Oscar Willis ahead of his fight at Fight Circus this weekend, Dean. He's doing beer boxing. So we'll talk to Oscar about that. I'm back here now on the bonfire with one of my media colleagues who only appears on the show, I guess, Oscar, when it's fight week for you. That's how we do it pre and post fight. But as I said to Dean when we were moving transitions between the segments, beer boxing for you at Fight Circus here on Friday. Tell us how this came about. It's a far cry from MMA and BKFC, I would say.
Yeah, it came about basically. Fight Circus and I have always had like a DM relationship, I guess, you know, like I enjoy their content. Obviously, it's very wacky and that kind of suits me. And then I saw they were coming to Vegas for the first time and I just DM'd them and was like, well, I have to be involved in some capacity. I don't care what it is. I'll hand out the coffees if you need me to. And they came back and said, do you want to be main event? So I said, sure, why not? My ego could do that. And then it just became beer boxing like right away. And I didn't care about the opponent or anything. As soon as they explained what beer boxing was, I said yes on the spot. So there we go.
You made some good promos on your things, but for the uninformed who may have not seen it, what is beer boxing?
Sorry, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple to explain. Basically, you hold a bottle of beer in one hand and you put a glove on the other and punch with it. So you box while you drink. I believe they're 1 minute rounds, which is great because, as Dan Hooker's told me many times, how hurt can you really get in 1 minute, you know? So so it's 1 minute rounds. I believe there's three rounds. I think there's probably going to be some very chaotic skullduggery and just nuts shit happening around it. But yeah, so it's basically you hold a bottle of beer and you drink while you punch with the other hand.
How do we watch this?
Well, this is the thing. So they're not even live streaming it. So it's going to be a VOD on the Mac Life after the fact. My segment, at least. I'm also doing commentary for the entire event with former opponent Ben Davis. So I'll do commentary until a co-main, and then I will go down to get ready. So you can tell it's a real serious organization. So it'll be available on the Mac Life probably Sunday once the hangover or CTE wears off.
How much time will you have to between when you need to step out of the booth and like get in there?
I mean, if he walks first, it's like a minute.
You're just going to go straight. So you're going to wear your fight gear. Like what's the attire?
It's funny you ask. I've been actually, so today was the first day I was like, I should probably figure out what I'm going to wear and stuff. So I think I'll probably like dress nice enough for the commentary booth. You don't want to just be there in sweats, but although that could be quite funny. But I think I've got trunks that I'll just jump into. I don't think I'll wrap my hand. I think I'll probably just go straight in the glove with that. I'm not sure. Although I do have a janky wrist. Maybe I'll have to. So there's that. But I think, and then boots. I guess I might dig out the old ones I used for BKFC or just do it in my Converse. I haven't decided yet. But yeah, I think it's going to be a very quick transition.
That's hilarious. Is this, do they work with the Nevada Commission for this? Like, is there any licensing needed or anything?
I don't
like
believe
that?
So. No, I don't believe there's any licensing required.
Okay. And I don't think you mentioned anything about your opponent. What do you know about him?
His name's Mark the Shark Irwin. He's fought for bare knuckle boxing, not BKFC, a different promotion.
Yes. Is that the Data 5000 one?
No, I don't actually know which one BKB is, but I know that he is a character. He has, ironically enough, I've fought in cheetah print both my times, but he also fights in cheetah print and dyes his hair in cheetah print. So I conceded that he could have cheetah print for this fight. I felt like that was the bigger thing to do. So yeah, I know he's a bit of a character. Other than that, I'll be honest, I'm very, very uninformed.
Yeah. And no weight class, right? You don't have to be, is there a weigh-in even or no?
There's no weigh-in, but I tell you what, Bob, obviously we had a busy week in Vegas last week. Yeah. A lovely steak with our friend Simon. And before that I had like friends visiting and stuff. So I was actually my career heaviest at 178 like a week ago.
Yeah.
And so I realized I would have to take my shirt off for this weekend. And that the idea of that really kind of kept me up at night. So I've been on the most insane diet a man can take. I've been having 3 egg whites and 1 chicken breast a day. And I'm down to 166 already. So that's like, what, like 12 pounds or whatever. So yeah. So we'll look good even if we don't feel good.
Love it. And yeah, you're going to miss us here in at UFC Vancouver, though. I'm very sad you don't get a fight week experience up here in the Great White North with me.
I know. I was looking at Vancouver and honestly, I was actually thinking for other reasons, I might pop over to Vancouver in a couple of weeks, but you won't be there, right? You'll be in Toronto.
No, I go back on Monday. I've been on the road for long enough. My new wife needs me back home.
Yes, well, for sure. So, but you must be excited about Vancouver home game.
Yeah,
no Gainer though, I don't think. But.
No, I don't think so. I'll ask you before I let you go. We had Dean Thomas on the last segment. We were talking about the most obvious UFC fights that need to be made in 2026, and that was on the back of like Charles Oliveira and Max Holloway. Like, there's been few easier layups where I feel like they've just been gifted this fight that you have to do. Do you have one or two for 2026? Like, you know, it's right there for the UFC. If they don't make this, that would be.
Are we counting the White House? Are we like including?
Yeah, you can go that far down the line if you want. No one mentioned any John Jones or heavyweight stuff. We did say Conor versus Chandler, but
I feel like Conor versus Chandler is the obvious one. I think, I mean, Volkanovski Lerone seems to be right there, right? That seems to be one that's very obvious. But yeah, in terms of the big, for me, I still want John and Tom. I know that Pereira's like forced his way in there, but for me, I still think that's massive. And I think also if Islam and Ilya both win, actually, no, Ilya Paddy in January, I think that's a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, that was one of mine I said that I think makes sense. What about John versus Ante Delia for the vacant title after Tom asked?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a fast rise to Delia, but I think he's got what it takes. I'm just curious, like if John now gets added leverage from Pereira, right? Like it's one thing if John's calling for that fight and Alex is out kind of injured at the championship list. But now Alex is also calling for it. It's like there's two-pronged attack on the UFC. I wonder if that'll sway it for them or not. But maybe yeah, John.
That's the one that I find so interesting. I mean, you'd think it would, but is that like too much of a concession for the UFC? Because that was the first thing, right? That's what John wanted from day one. And they were like, nah. And then we went through all this drama. It went to Tom.
I mean, they would basically be rewarding him for fucking the moment.
All of this to go back to the first thing he wanted. And you're ultimately getting that. It would be, I don't know if they're willing to do that.
Yeah, I know. I think that's, I personally don't know. I mean, obviously it'd be a big fight. I'm sure I'd be excited. But it would feel at that point like, and I say this is completely biased as can be. I feel like at that point, like John didn't want to fight Tom. Pereira wanted to go to heavyweight but didn't want to fight Tom. At that point, Tom's just being avoided from these fights that'll actually turn him into this generational guy that we want to talk about. So I feel kind of bad for Aspinall in that case, but business is business, I suppose.
Yeah, how much pressure? I feel like there's a lot of pressure on Tom going into this fight. Like, he needs to not only win, but needs to do something.
I was thinking that too, actually, on my drive over here to the studio, back from the supermarket to the house. But I was thinking about that. Like, there is a lot of pressure on him because if he doesn't look good, or if he even gets like rocked or anything like that, his stock will just plummet. Like, that's the way this sport works. You know, if he wins decisively, if he wins the first round the way he's been doing, then it's like back onto John Tom. Then no one will give a shit about Pereira, right? Because that's last weekend. This is this weekend. But if he doesn't smoke him, basically, everyone's going to be like, oh, he was never that good, you know? Yeah. And a lot of that comes from Cyril's performance against John, but also just like the fans like will hold you up. And then the moment you don't meet that standard, they will just let go and you'll just fall all the way to the floor. So yeah, a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And you're heading out there when? Sunday?
Monday.
Monday.
Yeah, day to recover from the grueling battle at the Palms Casino. deal with customs in Dubai.
Yeah, that's always a fun one. We'll obviously talk to you before then. We'll see if we can get you on for the victory celebration interview as well.
Of course, as is
tradition, Oscar.
Yeah, I'm back to 178 already.
All right, man, appreciate it as always. I'm gonna take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you to Dean. Thank you to Oscar for both their times, making it a great show today. That was a lot of fun. And we are now going to kick it into high gear for UFC Vancouver. I'll have some one-on-one interviews coming earlier in the week. Media day on Wednesday, weigh-in coverage, a Q&A on Friday, and then fight night here on Saturday. Rainier DeRitter and Brendan Allen, pretty high stakes in the middleweight division. So that will be a lot of fun. I will have the coverage. Make sure to keep it locked to MMA Junkie. See what I can do on this channel as well if anything comes up. Appreciate everyone following along. Appreciate my man Kamikaze Abhi Subban for producing the show as always. And until next week, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.